Welcome to Current State. I'm your host, Brooke Allen, filling in for Mark Bayshore, who is on vacation. Lucky, lucky Mark Bayshore. Well, you usually hear me every morning on Morning Edition, but today I'm joining you for Current State as well. And we do have a great show today. We're going to visit the Ixion Theater to learn about their new production of a Latin American fable, The Amazing Jesus, and plus churches across the United States and worldwide, of course, struggling to maintain their membership. And the United Methodist Church is no exception. Today, we'll talk with the church's new spiritual leader in Michigan, Bishop David Bard. But first, in 1982, a local businesswoman often found herself as the only female in the room. In fact, a name that may sound very familiar to many local residents, Martha Mayhood Mertz was the sole woman on the Lansing Regional Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors. And she decided to do something about that. Her idea was creating an award for those who promote women as leaders. And that is how the Athena Awards began, with one recipient in Lansing. And joining me today is Sarah Jennings, past president of the Women's Interest Network and chair of the Athena International 35th Anniversary Leadership Conference, which actually begins on Sunday.
Absolutely.
Good morning, Sarah. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
And so, Sarah, Athena began with Martha Mayhood Mertz. She was a successful woman, owned her own real estate company, but she was battling a bit of resistance. And this is really not about going up against men. It's about empowering women. So tell us a little bit of history about the Athena Awards.
Absolutely. You kind of said it at the beginning of your the session. And really what Martha saw 35 years ago was an imbalance in leadership teams. So she looked around the table when she was with the Lansing Regional Chamber of Commerce Board, and it wasn't balanced. And she just wanted to make that change. She really not only thought about an award, but something bigger. So Athena International's mission continues to be to develop, support, and celebrate women and empower women in leadership roles. It was really founded on Plato's quote, "What is honored in a country will be cultivated there." So you celebrate, and then, again, you'll be able to cultivate those leadership styles.
So it's really about giving back as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely, it is. The host committee that you mentioned for the conference, the Athena Women's Interest Network, was founded actually 6 years ago by a group who really wanted to be able to give back, and they also wanted to be able to be to really carry out the mission of Athena International on a local level. So we've got programs, professional development, resources, and really opportunities to create an amazing network, which again is what Athena International does.
And again, it isn't anything against men, but it's about empowering women.
Exactly. Again, Athena International's vision is to create a balanced leadership across the globe. So it's not about anybody should be more or less, or any different style is better than the other. It's just understanding that we all need to collaborate together.
And there are 8 principles involved. And so go ahead and tell me what those are, because those are pretty interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Athena Leadership Model, which is what the 8 principles are, was developed in the mid-80s, actually from a grant from the Kellogg Foundation, which, again, is another Michigan company. And they are: live authentically, leaders know their values and remain true to them, learn constantly. Obviously, we all know good leaders are always seeking to increase their knowledge. Advocate fiercely, champion what you believe is right, act courageously, foster collaboration, like we said before, collaboration is key, build relationships, understanding that you're not the only one in the room as a leader, give back, leaders serve, and celebrate. And again, that's the award piece of it.
So really, if anyone used those 8 principles in life in general, I think it would probably be a different kind of world.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's what Athena International is really striving to build. And locally, Athena Women's Interest Network, we're doing the same thing. We've got sessions and programs that's really based on teaching those principles to emerging leaders, to established leaders. The Connections program actually is a collegiate program, talking to women about different leadership styles. Unfortunately, many of us grow up in industries where the traditional command and control may not feel right. It's not our leadership style. So it's really just opening that and saying, hey, that's not the only way to lead.
So this 35th anniversary conference, it kicks off on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And Martha Mayhood Mertz, she lives in Arizona now, I think, right?
She does.
But she'll be back in town. Mm-hmm. So she'll be back in town. And of course, Ashley Judd is the keynote speaker. But before we talk about that, let's talk about the breakout sessions, because I know there are a lot of opportunities for entrepreneurs
this coming weekend?
There are, absolutely. All of the breakout sessions actually are based on one of the leadership principles. So we've taken the leadership principles and we've reached out to really speakers from across the globe. We have some speakers from Shanghai, Kenya, Vietnam, California, Arizona, North Carolina, just to name some of the regions that we're really pulling people from. So the group that we've got coming back here is phenomenal. We have a session that's discussion on leadership based on these principles with Shanghai, China, and Monterrey, Mexico. And it's a collaborative session where discussion is going to ensue in different cultures. How do these principles relate in different cultures? And then, as you said, with entrepreneurism, we have a panel session where actually Sherry DeClercq from MSU is going to facilitate. And they're really talking about the challenges and successes of women entrepreneurs across the globe. And then having a discussion, why do we care? Why does that matter? As small business owners, sometimes we think, you know, we're just local, but we're not anymore. It's a global world.
And students will be involved to some degree?
Yes, absolutely. We've got quite a few students, actually, that are going to be involved Monday afternoon in particular, just because of the program. Susie Merchant is one of our panelists talking about the importance to really start that conversation about leadership at a younger age, not starting when you get that first promotion and you're just told to go lead a team. Start it early.
So what is the age? I don't know if there's an age to this, or what is the youngest a person that you've seen actually come and join your network, or what's the youngest recipient of a Athena Award?
Well, Athena International has a Young Professionals Award, too. So we are actually, I think we'll talk about in a minute, talking about some of the young professionals, but there's not really an age limit. It's really about those people who live the Athena model, live the Athena lifestyle.
Okay, so you did mention the awards, and several will be given out, and some big names that we'll all recognize because they are local, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So Florine Marks.
Yes, absolutely. Florine Mark, who owns many, many franchises of the Weight Watchers Group. So it's WW Group is receiving an Organizational Leadership Award for all of her work in really empowering leadership teams, diverse leadership teams.
And then, of course, another name that has been in the news a lot, and I had the pleasure of meeting her a couple months ago, Dr. Mona Hanna-Attisha. So tell me a little about her award.
Yeah, so she's receiving the National Athena Leadership Award, and it's amazing. It's not a local award. It's national because of the impact she's obviously had on the Flint water crisis, but her advocacy and her acting courageously to speak out has really had an impact across the country.
Well, you know, Dr. Mona spoke to Kern State's Mark Bayshore back in March about her passion in saving and speaking out for the kids affected by the Flint water crisis, and we actually have that clip.
This is definitely my job now, and this is my mission, and this is why I wake up in the morning, is to do this work. And it's my commitment and to ensure that these kids have a brighter future, and so be it for now and for decades to come.
And I think that just goes to show you, I mean, this is one of many awards that Dr. Mona has won. And again, Dr. Mona Hanna-Attisha is the director of the Pediatric Residency Program at Hurley Medical Center and an assistant professor of pediatrics and human development at the MSU College of Human Medicine. So Sarah Jennings, who I'm speaking to today, she is the past president of the Women's Interest Network and chair of the Athena Ignite Conference, which is happening in Lansing this weekend. And there are a couple more award winners.
Yes, as I said, there's a National Leadership Award or National Young Professionals Leadership Award, and we're actually honoring Annie Clark and Andrea Pino, who created the organization End Rape on Campus. So I think that is a story in itself, but they are really across the country working with universities and colleges to get programs and support networks for students.
And of course, I know I've seen the billboard driving along I-96 of Ashley Judd, and she will be the keynote speaker. And she's a great actress, but I know that she was chosen for a different reason.
Right, absolutely. She is a great actress. She's a humanitarian. She's a fierce advocate for so many different people, women's empowerment, women's leadership in other countries. And again, what Athena Ignite this year, this 35th anniversary, the goal is to ignite people to make a change, ignite people to do something within themselves, within their organization, or within their community. Ashley Judd does that. She epitomizes that. So when she has her keynote, while I can't go through her whole speaking points, obviously, not that I would do it justice, but that would ruin the surprise. But really, her goal is to engage people, to ignite them to move on to something. I should say, too, obviously, she is a huge draw, but there are so many speakers throughout the conference, so many local leaders. The very first recipient, Mary Lee Davis, is coming back, and she, of course, is from MSU as well. We're so excited for what we're bringing to the Lansing community.
So You personally, what have you experienced through your work with Athena?
Athena has opened so many doors for me. It has provided so many coaches and mentors, informal relationships that I never thought I would have. It's funny, I have been working a lot with Shanghai, and my son is now he's 6 years old, and now he understands that we're really in a global world because he walks in my office at home and I'm on a video screen with, you know, people from Shanghai talking about how Cisco is going to help us collaborate and make the session work on Tuesday morning. So it's really amazing how you can really step out of your comfort zone. I'm an accountant with Maynard Casteris, and so I never thought I would be doing something like this.
So you mentioned your little boy.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about little boys and men and Athena. And are men involved in this at all?
Oh, absolutely. We have some men speakers. It's definitely not 100% female group. What Athena is, as we talked about, it's really about balance. It's not necessarily just about empowering women. It's all women, women facilitated. There are male speakers. There are definitely women or men, rather, who are going to be in attendance. And I've had this conversation with so many people that they just say it's a women's thing. It's a women's issue. It's a women's conference. Well, you know, it's about women's leadership, but without having men in the conversation, you're not going to get very far. You have to get men to understand also why it's so important to have that collaborative, diverse leadership team.
So out of those eight principles, which one means the most to you?
Oh, that's very difficult. I have to say, when I first read Martha's book, Becoming Athena, it really meant a lot to me because it was kind of that trigger that said, you know, this is a different leadership style and it really wakes you up. I think really act courageously. So that's the one that means the most to me. If you don't take that jump, if you don't make that leap and take a risk and are courageous for whatever it is you're passionate about, then life just kind of goes along ho-hum.
And ho-hum is kind of a drag.
Right, exactly.
So the conference starts on Sunday, and it actually lasts for a few days.
It does. We actually have our first excursion on Saturday. Start Garden in Grand Rapids has sponsored a lunch before we take a tour of Grand Rapids and Art Prize. So we're very excited about that. Sunday is the welcoming day, so we'll be at Urban Beat. We've got a private screening of Second Shift and a book signing there, so we're really excited to be able to collaborate with those developers and producers. And then we'll have our welcome reception at the Michigan Historical Center. So again, it is about Lansing, because we definitely want to show the world Lansing, but it's really about welcoming them all to Michigan.
And you're expecting people from all over the world.
Yes, we've got over six different countries involved. Over 17 different states are going to be here. Again, 400 to 450 people we're really expecting. So it's really an amazing event.
Are you expecting any young girls? I mean, I know college students will be there.
So hindsight is 20/20. If we had to do it over again, I don't know if we would have had it quite so close to the beginning of the school year. It's just difficult to get those logistics down, but we definitely have invited some, and there are some tables to get some young girls there. And then we have plans to reach out to those that we have reached out that just we couldn't get the logistics done. So that connections program, talking about the leadership model, will happen in the coming months.
Okay, so there are still spots available?
There are. Today is the last day to register, so go online to www.athenaignite.com. You can register for the full conference or just the luncheon with Ashley Judd.
And she's speaking on Tuesday.
She is on Tuesday at noon.
And that's at the Lansing Center?
It is.
Okay, so Lansing Center, and this is the 35th, remind me of the, I mean, it's a mouthful.
Yes, it is. 35th anniversary of Athena International, and you will be ignited to make a change.
And also many, many familiar faces. And if somebody just wanted to really go to one of those breakout sessions, would that be possible?
We don't have any breakout sessions. We really wanted that are just standalone individual registrations. We really wanted to make sure that the conference was fluid and flowed. It's difficult to isolate things like that. We did separate the luncheon out, but the rest of it, we really encourage people to attend as much as they can.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Sarah. Again, this is Sarah Jennings, past president of the Women's Interest Network and chair of the Athena Ignite Conference, which is happening in Lansing. Officially kicks off on Sunday, but there is a gathering on Saturday in Grand Rapids. So best of luck, and I'm looking forward to hearing all about it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Coming up, churches of all denominations are grappling with issues ranging from a loss of membership to LGBTQ inclusion. The United Methodist Church in Michigan has a new leader who's trying to forge a way ahead for his congregation. We'll talk with Bishop David Bard about those challenges. That's later this hour on Current State. Around the same time as Halloween, there is a large celebration of Mexican heritage called Dia de los Muertos. It deals heavily with the remembrance of ancestors and loved ones which have passed on. And it is that celebration which surrounds a new play in Lansing, courtesy of Ixion Theater. Although there's also a good heaping of The Wizard of Oz as well. It sounds very interesting. The play is called The Amazing Jesus, and Current State's Jamie Paisley attended one of the final rehearsals before the play. It actually opens this weekend. And he asked Jeff Croft, director of the play, as well as Ixion, about that curious title, The Amazing Jesus.
The pronunciation is based on the fact that it's actually set in during the Day of the Dead. And our author, O.G. Ubroth, which her name is Aralia Garza, and so she's a Latina. So that's the pronunciation is to reflect that, not the traditional way that we would expect it in the Midwest.
Now, for O.G., this is the third kind of instance that she's worked with the Ixion Theater. Could you talk through what it's like with O.G.?
Sure. She's always been willing to step up and do some different writing for us. The first script that she wrote for us was the story of Phaeton dealing with his father when we wrote the Four Disgracers. And so in that one, we learned that in The Distance from the Sun, that daddy issues could even apply to demigods. Then she did another one act for us for Mother's Nature, in which the grandmother explains to the granddaughter that the family tradition is to poison the paramours just to make sure they're strong enough to stay in the family.
That's only natural, of course.
Always natural for that to just, you know, poison them just to keep it, you know, nice and strong stock there.
Now, as you said before, OG, standing for Aurelia, is this, so the Dia de los Muertos, does that ties a lot more into her tradition than it would Greek mythology?
Absolutely. And this is actually the first script that I know of that, as far as her, she's written, that's really kind of delved into, you know, her cultural background and her history. So certainly for Mother's Nature, it did to a degree, but it was much more parody, much broader. I think all of us have had a mother or a grandmother who was overbearing. Not so much to the point of poisoning, but, you know, definitely getting in the way of the new love interest.
So then, as director, incorporating more of Dia de los Muertos into the set design and everything that's in it, talk to me about that process and being culturally respected of that period.
Absolutely. Again, having Aralia is sort of a guide helps a lot. Aralia has been involved with the process throughout the development of the script, but also in brainstorming what we're doing. In fact, some of the decorations she's been making as well. But we're not hitting on it too strongly. It's certainly the setting. It is certainly the milieu that it's occurring in, but it's not going over the top with that. But we do get to explore some of the more theatrical costuming as we move further along into the play.
And makeup as well?
And makeup as well, yeah. So, like I said, there's a great deal of transformation during the show, and I don't want to necessarily give too much away with that. But there's a big change between Act 1 and Act 2.
I don't understand. What's the point of dying if you have to face every day the way you had it when you were alive?
That's what I told her, but she wasn't having none of it. She said you messed everything up. She said she's going to talk to your mother about your behavior. Sorry about that, senor.
She can't just
talk. Hey, you know my nacha. She does what she wants to do when she wants to do it.
Well, she says that now.
The premise is the main character, Leticia, is coming to visit the curandero, Jesus, to demand that he use his magic to help those in the land of the living. And throughout, we learn that, he's not really inclined to do a whole lot of that heavy lifting. And Leticia's not really willing to let him off the hook. So there's a lot of transformation throughout the show. In fact, visually, the show transforms between Act 1 and Act 2.
As we talk about Jesus being that sort of magical person that has him, and Letitia trying to coax that or take some of that away from it, is there a large magical element? Is there illusions, or is it mostly the stagecraft of illusion that's coming across in The Amazing Jesus?
We find that Jesus has very little magic when it comes to having everyone there to watch it. So, no, there isn't a great deal of illusions and such popping up, because as Letitia confronts him, he has less and less magic to dole out.
Now, the size of the theater that this is going to be on, the Robin Theater, is fairly small. Does it have a cast size that also kind of reflects that?
It is a small cast. It's about six people, but have the opportunity to fill the stage with those six people and definitely engage the audience. And we've got some of the show that comes right out into the front, so we're having fun with it.
As I talked about the Robin Theater, you can find tickets, by the way, over at Eventbrite. They're $15 at the door. You can get them at Eventbrite. But of the four productions going on this year with the Ixion Theater, there's something different in this season that all four are in that same location. Could you talk about that relationship and how you also have, I believe, a special sort of deal for those that are supporters of the Ixion Theater as well?
Sure. Well, first off, we're thrilled because Dylan and Gina D, the proprietors there at the Robin, are amazing and gracious. And we've been so fortunate that ever since they opened their doors last summer to be able to call the Robin our home. And they've made it our home. They throw their doors open. They welcome us regardless of the amount of things we bring to the stage or bring to the backstage. And they're wonderful with that. They've allowed us to actually create a season ticket pass this year, which we'd never had before. But we're also doing all four shows there, and all four are new works, which allows us to go and explore things that maybe larger theaters can't do because they have, you know, higher overhead or difficulty with, you know, finances. So this allows us to experiment more than most.
That was Ixion director Jeff Croft talking about The Amazing Jesus, the world premiere play coming to the Robin Theater in Riotown, Lansing, both this weekend and next. But as with any journey, you need a central character to follow. For The Amazing Jesus, that person is named Letitia.
My name is Lauren Ezzo, and in The Amazing Jesus, I'm playing Letitia.
Have you been involved with the Ixion Theater before?
I have not. I actually heard about it from a friend I went to school with. And so then I started reading up a little on their, I think it was their last production, which was She Kills Monsters, which was really, really well received and got great reviews. And they took it to a gaming con someplace. And so after that, I was kind of interested. But this is my first time. And so far, so good.
Are you a native Michigander as well?
Yes, I am. I hail from the 517. I grew up in Hazlitt, and my dad works at State. So yeah, you know, around the area, go State. Go Dagwoods.
We've just seen you obviously know what's happening. Yes. The first act, I'm told at least, is very grounded-ish in reality,
yeah.
And then something will make a change in the second half. The first half, what are the themes that you feel Letitia brings to it or is talking about?
Letitia herself may be my favorite character, partly because she, you know, gives me impetus to be here. but she, there's kind of this railing against fate and who that's ordained by, whether, you know, God, if it's God, and kind of rebelling against what she sees as the set structures. And I think we can all kind of identify with that mindset of, is this it? Is this what I'm supposed to be doing? Why is this what I'm doing? Why do other people, et cetera, et cetera? And in the second act, things definitely change, several things, and that sort of explodes out into a couple more different things. So it's fun.
Is it that self-determination aspect that you really can't kind of bring to?
Sure. Yeah, I'd like to think so. I'd like to consider myself a driven person, but I think more the fact that Letitia sometimes says those things that maybe you don't in mixed company. So I am that person who, you know, will, if it's the first impulse, wait for the fifth, because that's the best one. And Letitia is not like that at all. So that's been really fun.
Why should people go through any of it if it never gets any better?
Depends on what you mean by it. sounds like your it has a lot of little things mixed up in it, Miha. Just because the water is boiling don't mean it's going to make good soup. Sometimes it just boils laundry.
What's my pot boiling for, Tia? What's it making?
Whatever you want.
Are you kidding? It's never what I want.
Oh, maybe you're wanting the wrong thing.
We're speaking with Lauren Ezzo, who portrays the central character Letitia in the next Ixion Theatre premiere play called The Amazing Jesus, opening this weekend at the Robin Theatre in Riotown, Lansing. Indeed, the Latina playwright O.G. Ubroth is Lansing-based, and so Lauren, in learning this role, has had some opportunity to learn from Ubroth about bringing this strong-willed woman of Letitia to life and to death.
I've met her briefly. I actually haven't spoken with her much, but Aralia has this, obviously, a very, very, very unique vision and writing style. And there's a lot. I recently started researching another play that she's doing locally, Kintsukuri. And the thing I see a lot in Aralia's writing is that she brings a lot of herself and her, you know, her experience to it, which is true of any writer. But with Aralia, it's very, very. There is no pretense, and that's helpful, you know, because it's so honest and because there's so much to work with there. So I think I see a little bit of her in every character, Letitia included, and and she's very funny, so so that's good too.
In the setting of the play, Dia de los Muertos is where that is, and there's a lot of kind of Spanish and Latino items that are in there. Does that resonate with you at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not Latina myself, you know, but I am a second, third generation. We're all children of immigrants. And so whether it is a choice you make is to push back against that or really, you know, go completely the other direction. I think everybody has that or if you don't know where you come from, and I feel like Letitia, though she does know, feels as if she doesn't, you know, and if you're misplaced in that culture, if you don't feel at home in your home, I think that's another relatable aspect that comes out.
Favorite moment of Act 2?
Oh, of Act 2? There is, the whole of Act 2 I love because I can't say.
That's giving, you know.
Right. There's a moment late in Act 2 where sort of, just, like, everything falls apart at that point, and it's, you, like, the fourth wall is just obliterated. There is no wall. There's barely even a structure at that point, and it's one specific, and I think if you come to see the show, you'll definitely know which one it is. It's very, very late in the play, but I'm directly involved, which is another great thing, and that's definitely the kicker for me, so.
That's Lauren Ezzo, who portrays Letitia in the Ixion Theatre's upcoming production of The Amazing Jesus. This new play by Lansing-based playwright O.G. Ubroth is directed by Ixion's director, Jeff Groff, and will be located at the Robin Theatre in Riotown, Lansing. More information about the play can be found online at Ixion Theatre, that's IXIONtheatre.com. For Current State, I'm Jamie Paisley.
Coming up on Current State, we've got a pop-up story from our last event where the theme was The Heat is On. That's coming up later this hour on Current State. Welcome back to Current State on WKAR 90.5 FM. I'm your host, Brooke Allen, filling in for Mark Bayshore. And in case you haven't heard yet, our next Pop-Up Stories live storytelling event is Thursday, September 29th. It's going to be at Reach Studio Arts Center at 6 p.m. And I will actually be the host that night. And this will be my first time going to Pop-Up Stories, so I'm really excited. And the theme for September is Turning Over a New Leaf. So come on out and hear some great stories. And if you're inspired by the theme, team and you would like to tell a story of your own, don't steal anyone else's story. We still have room for storytellers, and you can email us at currentstate@wkar.org to sign up. Well, there are challenging times for Christian churches in America, and in some ways, that statement is nothing new. Congregations have faced various hardships for centuries, and these days, virtually all denominations are struggling to maintain their numbers as an increasing number of youth are shunning organized religion, and as the nation becomes more ethically and culturally diverse, churches are forced to, of course, reevaluate their message. And this month, the Michigan area of the United Methodist Church welcomed its new spiritual leader, and Bishop David Bard began his duties on September 1st, and he now leads about 135,000 UMC members in Michigan. And he is with me now live in the studio to talk about his new role and the direction of the church. And Bishop Bard, good morning and welcome to Current State.
Good morning. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And first of all, Bishop Bard, I found out that you are originally from Duluth, Minnesota, so welcome to Michigan.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
And, well, I guess we don't have to warn you about the winters here. So
people have been warning us, and I said we're well prepared.
Well, good, good. So for our listeners who may not be familiar with the United Methodist Church, how is it organized?
The United Methodist Church is an international denomination. It's a rather complex organization in some ways. So within the United States, it is organized primarily by conferences. So the state of Michigan currently has two conferences. One of my tasks is to help follow through on a vote that two conferences took last year to merge to become a single conference. So the state of Michigan is a conference. There are 50-some conferences within the United States and 46 Episcopal areas. Some bishops oversee two conferences, like I currently do, although soon it will be a single conference.
So when will that single conference happen?
The official date that we're shooting for to legally merge is January 1st, 2019, but we're beginning to do some of that work ahead of time. Some of our committees are meeting together. We're working hard on a lot of aspects of this merger coming together.
So the 2016 conference, and that was actually at MSU in June, at the Breslin Center.
Yes, it was.
And is that when everyone decided to meet together for the what happened there?
So I believe that's when the final vote took place. It could have taken. Actually, I think the vote took place in 2015 to come together to create the new conference, and they've been following through. They met together the two conferences for the first time at MSU in 2016.
So that had never happened before.
It had never happened before. The two conferences, West Michigan and Detroit, had always met separately.
Oh, okay. So then that happened right at MSU. So very local.
It was very nice for that to happen here.
And were you here?
I was not.
Okay.
I was not.
Okay.
So I really learned that I would be coming to Michigan 3 days after I got elected a bishop in July.
Okay. And so how did you feel about that?
We were very happy to come to Michigan. Michigan is somewhat familiar territory. The Upper Peninsula was always a part of our news cycle in Duluth. Duluth is on Lake Superior. So knew something of that. I traveled to Michigan a few times during my life. And in fact, when I was going into the sixth grade, my father's job got transferred to Michigan, and we almost moved here. But then he found another job in Duluth, and we stayed.
So almost, but not quite.
Almost, but not quite. I'm much happier now than I probably would have been in the sixth grade to move to Duluth, from Duluth.
Right, right. So now you're here. And of course, we are talking with Reverend David Bard. He's the new bishop for the United Methodist Church in Michigan. So you were elected in July, but just assumed your leadership about 3 weeks ago.
Yes.
So you lead about 135,000 members in Michigan. So this is a challenging time for virtually all faith communities. And of course, one big issue facing the United Methodist Church is the rights of the LGBTQI community. What does your church leadership say about including those individuals in the faith?
That is an issue that faces us, and it faces the United Methodist Church in somewhat of a unique way. Unlike many other denominations in the United States, we are an international denomination, so we have people who vote on our policies internationally. And as you might imagine, the conversation in the United States is a very different conversation than in places, for example, on the continent of Africa, where conversations about homosexuality in some places are illegal. So We are working on this issue. The United Methodist Church meets every 4 years in what's called a general conference that votes on the official policies of the denomination. This last general conference asked the Council of Bishops, of which I'm a part, to provide some leadership on this issue in a way they'd never asked before. So there's a commission being formed to talk about how we might move forward as a denomination on the issue. Currently, the denominational policy is that, and I'm quoting from our Book of Discipline, the practice of homosexuality is incompatible with Christian teaching. When I ran for bishop, I was clear that I would like to see some changes in that. But as a bishop, I also am charged with upholding the current rules. And so I live in that tension. But I'm going to be very supportive of that commission's work as it tries to help our denomination find a way forward together.
So the UMC formed a special council.
It is in the process of forming a commission. The Council of Bishops is in the process of forming a commission on behalf of the whole church. Sorry to get into all of the, you know, technicalities of that.
No, but it's very important, and probably very important for your members. And you have a lot of members, 135,000
yes.
members.
Who have diverse perspectives, who read the Bible with somewhat different eyes, who have struggled with issues of inclusion in very different ways. So I want to be respectful of people who have views that may be different from my own and listen well to all of those folks.
So denominations struggling with issues like this, and I know a lot of churches losing members over issues like this.
The loss of membership across denominations, including ours, is complex. This may be one issue for which people are leaving the church, both because they maybe not don't like the fact that we're continuing to struggle with it. They feel like there's a clear way forward. They have a clear understanding of where the church should be, and that the church is struggling with it is an issue. But you know, our whole society, every denomination has been losing people, and I think there's a lot of complex reasons for that. Partly it's struggles over issues around human sexuality and inclusion of LGBTQI persons. Some of it is the busyness of our culture has changed dramatically. Most families have working parents who are, you know, they're very stretched. Things like youth athletics take up more weekends than they used to. It's a pretty complex issue that we try to address.
So it's really all around. It's not just one issue.
I think membership loss can't be traced simply to one issue.
So if you had one thing that you could hope for being the new bishop, mm-hmm. what would that be for? What would you wish for?
I would hope that all of our United Methodist members take time to remember why their faith and church is important to them and be willing to live that out and to share that in gentle and kind ways with other people.
Let's talk about that was very beautiful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Let's talk about the church's international service.
Yes.
You guys do a lot.
We do. So I talked a little bit about some of the tensions in voting on difficult issues internationally, but one of the real gifts of being an international denomination is that we are able to do some wonderful work internationally. One good example of that is a project called Imagine No Malaria. It began with a program to get medicated nets to people in sub-Saharan Africa where malaria was a significant problem, where the death rate was high from the disease. And then it became clear that sometimes those nets weren't well used, and so we needed to add an educational component to that. So my daughter traveled to Uganda one time and saw this mosquito net being used as a fishing net. Well, it was a nice use of the net. It wasn't what it was intended to be used for. So this nothing but nets morphed into what we're calling Imagine No Malaria. We've raised close to $75 million to provide nets and education, and the death rate from malaria in sub-Saharan Africa has gone down 50% since this program was initiated.
Since the whole education process began.
The nets and the education process, yes.
And part of that because of your daughter?
Well, I don't know about my daughter, but part of it is because of the work of the United Methodist Church. And we've partnered with a lot of other organizations, religious and secular, to make this happen.
And right now we are talking about the United Methodist Church in Michigan, and the new bishop, David Bard, is with us. And you just started September 1st.
Yes.
And how do you see your duties to the church? How do you define that?
Well, I have some specific responsibilities. So in our denomination, bishops appoint pastors to their place of service. So that's one of my big jobs, and part of that involves really listening well to congregations and their needs and pastors and their hopes and dreams and concerns and needs. Part of it is really a deeply symbolic role, being present and listening, caring, offering words of hope that are also rooted in reality. You don't want to offer words of hope that don't seem like you've taken people's real concerns into account. But being a person of faith means being a person of hope.
So are you accessible to members?
I am. Now, my schedule is pretty complex, so I do respond if people have concerns, and people do know how to get a hold of me. I have already gotten some emails, both welcome and here's my issue, and I respond as best I can to individuals. But primarily, I will be meeting people in groups. So I've got like 3 welcoming events coming up in the state of Michigan, one in the Detroit area, one in the Kalamazoo area, and one at the tip of the Lower Peninsula. And I've already been in Marquette and was there for the opening of a new church service. So I will be traveling around a lot.
So you're making the rounds.
I am doing that and plan to continue to do that.
So what do you expect from yourself?
What do I expect from myself? Oh, what a wonderful question. I expect that I will continue to learn and grow as I'm in this position, that my own faith will deepen, that I can share that with others. I expect that I will continue to grow in my leadership so that I can genuinely be with others, people and congregations, as they navigate this challenging time for the Christian church in the United States and in Michigan.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Again, we've been talking about the United Methodist Church in Michigan, and Bishop David Bard is the congregation's new spiritual leader. And he was elected in July and just took over his duties on September 1st. And he's from Duluth, Minnesota, almost moved here as a 6th grader to
Yes.
Michigan, but did not. But he's here now. And so how long are you here for? Are you here for a certain time or?
Bishops are assigned 4 years at a time. So that's all I can count on. But I can serve as a bishop in the United States. In the United Methodist Church, bishops are elected for life. And there is a mandatory retirement age. So my total term as a bishop will be 12 years. And I could serve all 12 of those in Michigan. I could serve in 3 different places. I'm kind of hoping that's not the case after just moving. Not anxious to move again.
Of course not. Well, Bishop Bard, it was a pleasure talking with you, and best of luck. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thanks for taking time, and thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. Our August pop-up story event was at Red Cedar Spirits, and the theme was The Heat is On. Storyteller Dave Dunkel told a story about feeling that heat, both figuratively and literally, in the jungle.
When I think of hot, I think of triple canopy jungle in Central America, just like a stone's throw from the equator. I am a jungle expert. Now, this isn't a designation that was awarded by the National Geographic Society, anything like that. It was something I earned in the United States Army. And I earned that designation by going through a tried and true Army training method that utilizes fear and heat. So what they do is they take you and they put you in the hottest place on the planet, and then they just like scare the bejesus out of you for whatever length of time it takes for you to become an expert. And in this case, in jungle expert training, it was 21 days of survival in the jungle. So prior to stepping out there and beginning the training, you go through an acclimatization period. You know, you're down there for 2 days. They give you a couple briefings. I was accompanied by my young private let's call him Gilly, because Gilly was his name. And and we go through this series of briefings, and one of the briefings was where they show you slides of the various flora and fauna in the jungle that you need to avoid because for some reason or another they're dangerous. And unfortunately, everything in the jungle is designed to kill a human being. It doesn't matter if it's, I mean, it's trees and it's the dirt is poisonous. I had not heard the term poisonous barbs so often as in my life as I heard during that briefing. So they're going through these slides, and do not touch the electric caterpillar. It's got poisonous barbs and can inflict deadly stinging pain. Two steps, you'll make it before you die. The black palm, same thing, poisonous barbs. They have poisonous birds in the jungle, things I've never even heard of. So as they're going through these slides, a picture of a dinosaur pops up. And the instructor is looking at it, just straight-faced, and he's saying, "Do not antagonize the Tyrannosaurus Rex. He may look docile, but he has a brain the size of a walnut." And so young Gilly, my private, he's freaking out. Gilly's from the backwoods of Tennessee. He's never stepped out of state, let alone a triple canopy jungle in Central America. But an abundance of caution is actually an attribute of a private, so I didn't want to dissuade him. So we fast forward 10 or 15 days later. Now we're somewhat acclimatized. We're in the middle of our training, and we're conducting what they call stand to. And stand to is when you get up in the morning, 45 minutes or an hour before sunup, and you grab your rifle and you're quiet and you just wait for that attack that will come at dawn. Because the French and the Indians, well, they always attack at dawn, and the army is a creature of habit, so you just... They have not gotten rid of that transition. But noise and light discipline are important. You have to be quiet. So as I'm laying there with Gilly and the sun is slowly creeping through the canopy, and we're whispering to each other and talking about family, and I look and there's something on Gilly's forehead. I can't quite make out what it is. Gilly's a black kid, and it's dark, and whatever was on his forehead is dark. So, and I don't want to, you know, play on his caution and blow noise and light discipline, so I just kind of continue talking to him. And as the light continues to grow brighter, I notice that it's a bat on his face. And it's just not a normal bat. This is a vampire bat. And the reason I know it's a vampire bat is because it had dug a gouge in his forehead, which was bleeding relatively profusely, and the bat was like just like licking his little feet in his hair and hanging upside down. And what most people don't realize about vampire bats is they don't fly in and swoop down on their prey, and they actually stealthily, slinkily crawl across the ground, and we're like hairless meat pies out there. So they had just crawled on him and was feasting. And so as to not alarm him and to blow noise and light discipline, I says, hey Gilly, just go like this, you know, wipe your forehead like there was a bug or something there. And of course, as he reaches up and feels that it's a mammal on his face, he of course freaks out. There goes noise and light discipline. He knocks it halfway across the jungle. So a few days later, as I'm visiting him in the hospital, because he had to get a whole series of rabies treatment because we weren't able to find this vampire bat, and it was extremely painful, a numerous series of shots in the stomach, and you know, I felt really bad for the kid, and I didn't quite know what to say, and I looked at him, I said, you know, at least it wasn't a Tyrannosaurus Rex. So, thank you.
And again, our next pop-up story, September 29th at Reach Studio Art Center. And that's our show for today. Coming up tomorrow on Current State, this weekend, a Lansing church is joining some 350 other U.S. communities hosting concerts to promote awareness of gun violence. The CDC reports an average of 30,000 Americans are killed by guns every year. Current State's Kevin Lavery talks with a local anti-gun activist and an MSU theater director about the concert across America. That and more Friday on Current State. The executive producer of Current State is Peter Worf. Katie Cook directed our show today, and thanks also to Scott Pohl, Kevin Lavery, Jamie Paisley, and Drew Hill. The Current State podcast is your informative, insightful, and indispensable connection with what's happening around Mid-Michigan and beyond.
From politics to education, environmental news to healthcare, science and tech to music and theater. Stories from around the state and your hometown. That's the Current State Podcast, anywhere, anytime at iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. You can stay connected with Current State on Twitter at KAR Current State and on Facebook at Current State from WKAR. I'm Brooke Allen. You've been listening to Current State on WKAR. We'll see you tomorrow.